Next time you see a rainbow in the sky, remember this promise of God.
God says, whenever you see that rainbow, I want you to remember that I'm promising you this is the last time I'm going to destroy the earth with a flood. So it's God's faithfulness to say, I had to do this once. The next time I do it, it will be final. But right now, you don't get all freaked out about, oh no, the world is going to end. We're going to destroy ourselves. God didn't want people to live with that kind of fear. Like, oh, when's the next flood coming? When's the next catastrophe happening? No, what God wanted his people to wait for is for him to show up and change everything.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshiped and exalted here.
Discovering balanced living through the Word of God. This is The Balanced Word with Dave Rolfe. Dave is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Today we continue through the Bible in stories with the historical account of the flood recorded in Genesis. It's time for Noah and his family to board the ark and for judgment to begin on a world that has rejected God. Remember, all of this is in response to the great wickedness in the world at that time. God is about to put a stop to it all and basically start over with just a few people and some animals. With all the details from Genesis chapter 7, here's Dave.
Now, it began to rain. Once they got in there and God closed the door, and can you imagine, they've never really seen rain. They don't know what it is to float around in a boat. They had no doubt seen the ocean because, you know, the earth is mostly covered with water. So they knew what water was. They probably knew what a boat was. But for the water to come where they were was something that would have been kind of spooky. And plus, all the people of the culture around were laughing at them, no doubt, and going, you've been talking about this for 100 years. This is not going to happen. And maybe even for Noah's kids and especially the in-laws, they're going, what are we thinking? This is because really it says Noah was the only guy who was really righteous. So they're sort of going along with them just to keep the family peace. But they're all probably thinking, this isn't going to happen, but what's it going to hurt if we do it? So they're crowding around on the boat, and then the door is closed. Nothing. But then gradually it starts to rain. They had never really experienced rain the way that they were at this point. Now, it's possible and probably even likely that the earth had a water canopy around it. That's not unheard of. Astronomically. So if the planet was protected by a water canopy, that would explain how you could live so long, why a 500-year-old guy is having kids. Our bodies are actually constructed to easily last 1,000 years if we don't get infected from something from without, such as the sun. Pretty hard to stay out of the sun. You can use sunscreen, but the ultraviolet rays and everything that get into our atmosphere are what ages us. But if there was a water canopy, you have protection, and that's not happening. Well, now they're getting in the boat, and as it describes, we'll look at chapter 7, verse 11. It says, in the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. Now, remember, in our creation account, we saw this mass of water that was then separated to create the atmosphere. And it says that the firmament was the space between the water and the water. So now, if that starts busting up, can you imagine the moisture, the rain that could have poured on them at this point? And if the windows of heaven really were open. Now look over at verse 17. Now the flood was on the earth 40 days. The waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters prevailed and greatly increased on the earth, and the ark moved about on the surface of the waters, and the waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth, and all the high hills under the whole heaven were covered. The waters prevailed 15 cubits, or, you know, 27 feet or so up above the height of the mountains they were covered. So they get in a boat, bunch of animals, a lot of food, close the door. Water is just pouring down. And it's a major, major flood where they're floating. And pretty soon it's like there's no mountaintops left. We're actually up above the highest mountaintop. And this lasted. They stayed on the ark for a little over a year if you add it all up. Does this sound ridiculous in a way? Like, even with a water canopy, where are you going to get that much water? Well, it's funny, we think like that. And there are some people who go, I couldn't believe that because there's not enough water to cover the highest mountains in the world. Are you kidding me? There's enough water easily to do that. I mean, you understand, 2/3 of the world is covered with water, right? Well, that water is not all 5 feet deep. It's not the shallow end. There are places where under the sea are hugely deep. The Mariana Trench, 6.7 miles deep that we know of. Now, the highest mountain in the world, Mount Everest, is only 5.5 miles high. And there's a lot more of the trench than there is of Everest. So what happens is, first of all, we don't know that the mountains were always as high as they are. Because, for instance, if there was a catastrophe like this, the runoff of the water would have made big mountains. We've seen that happen with the seismic activity, where tectonic plates begin to shift, and all of a sudden, volcanic stuff comes out, and you have a mountain where you used to have a valley. And then you have a valley where you used to have a mountain. These kinds of shifts aren't that hard. Well, if you just took all the deep parts of the sea and you lifted them up, and you took mountains and lowered them a little bit, all the water in the world, and this isn't counting a vapor barrier, this is just water that we now have on the earth, could cover the entire globe 1.7 miles deep. So there's a lot of water there. And so if the valleys weren't as deep and the mountains weren't as high in those days, which is easily plausible, all we know is the water got above that mountain. So if that mountain wasn't that big and those valleys weren't that deep, no problem with a little bit of shifting of the tectonic plates, which, again, in those days, Earth is fairly young. It's before now. There could have been incredible activity to do something like that. It wouldn't take much. We have seen entire islands just covered. It happens. And we've seen valleys turn into lakes and vice versa. So here, what he says happened easily could have happened. So don't say, I don't believe in this because that just sounds preposterous. No, it's totally logical. You read mythology, and they're always saying things that are ridiculous that could have never happened. You read the Bible, and you go, wow, sounds like a story, but this could actually have happened. It could happen again. And if you have that kind of water movement from huge, you know, geologic shifts, then when the water runs off, it's going to create the Grand Canyon. It's going to create all sorts of, you know, things that look like they might have taken millions of years to make. But no, you can make them really quick with enough water moving fast enough. And all of a sudden you find out, wow, there are some mountains that are way higher than they used to be. And there's some valleys that are way deeper. So the flood is described, and it's like this huge flushing of the world. Now, how do we know that this is the whole earth? And I hear people argue about this. There are some people who say, I believe in a flood, but I think it was probably a local flood. Because, you know, all it would have had to do, all the people in the world lived in a pretty small area at that time. And so all you had to do is wipe out them. It could have just been a part of the planet that was flooded. Now, not only do we see geologically evidence of everything having been underwater at one time or another, no one really contends with that, there's a logical problem I have with a local flood. And that is, why would you have a guy spend 100 years to build a boat? Have him build a trailer and take his stuff over to the next valley. I mean, now, it's true, the Hebrew word eretz, or that's land or earth, most of the time it's used, it just refers to a small area, a city, a country, or whatever. It can refer to both. But logically, if the intent of God is to start civilization over, it at least had to flood everywhere where people were. Now, we're not going to, on a Sunday morning, go into the story of the Tower of Babel. I originally was doing it, and then I figured I have 87 studies for 52 weeks, so it's one of the ones that didn't make the cut this week. But at the Tower of Babel, the people are all gathering together in one small place. They all wanted to be together. And God ends up changing their languages so that they would spread out. See, God doesn't desire for all people to get together all the time. He told them again and again, I want you to spread out. Now, it could be that what happened in the flood opened up pathways for all sorts of other areas of the earth to be populated. Most evil things start in cities, not in the countryside. And so God may have used the flood as a way to spread them out as well. At any rate, the flood, you know, the rain stopped after 40 days and 40 nights, and you know probably the story. They were waiting and waiting, didn't see any mountains, and at some point the thing kind of touched down. They felt them touch solid land on Mount Ararat in present-day Turkey. So he's like, well, let's see what's out there, and he sends a bird, a raven out, and it flies all over the place and can't find a place to even land. So they wait a while. Another week later, he takes a dove. He sends the dove out. The dove flies around, comes back. Then he waits a while more, and he sends the dove back out. And this time, he came back with a little leaf in his mouth. And he's like, okay, there's dry land somewhere, and it's growing. It's lush. And so he waits another week, sends the dove out, and the dove doesn't come back. So then he's going, okay, this is great. And God says, it's time to get out. It's time to get out of the ark. I'm sure this was good news. Living in essentially a huge floating barn for a year with your relatives, I'm sure it was like, woohoo! So they get out, and they must have seen the most incredible sight. Because think about the whole earth being irrigated. And then the water soaks in, and these plants are coming to life, and it's just awesome. The animals are so excited to get off the boat, and so are Noah and his family. And it's like, man, this is a fresh start. And it felt more exciting than just about anything that we can imagine. They stepped off the ark. And so at that point, God just made a few points with them, and we just need to think about these. First of all, he said, go multiply the people and the animals. Just go fill the earth. Your task now is to start civilization all over again and hopefully to do it differently than you did before. So go and multiply. That's a pretty cool commandment, actually. Now, I don't think necessarily he would say the same thing today, because I think we've pretty much covered the multiplication thing, but that was his word to them. But the second thing was, he said, now the animals are going to be skittish. They're going to be afraid of people. And that's kind of interesting as a consequence of the flood. It gives us some insight into perhaps the relationship that people had with animals. Maybe it's one reason why it was easy enough to get two of each of them on the ark, because they didn't have this hostile environment between them. But now God says, the animals aren't going to like you anymore. And it could be that going back to whatever gross perversions they were into, that somehow animals were involved, either as an object of their worship or as someone who was a role model for how you should live your life like an animal. We don't know. But he said, this time around, you and the animals aren't going to be such good buddies. Remember way back in the Garden of Eden, it was Eve talking to a snake that caused everything to kind of deteriorate and go downhill. And now he's saying, the animals aren't on your side anymore. Now, I'm not going to take this and teach you that you shouldn't have a dog and dress him up in a sweater, but I'm just saying. God said, it's not natural. But then he goes also, and this is kind of weird, he says, and by the way, not only are the animals are afraid of you, they have a good reason, because they're edible. Now, before this, they didn't eat animals. But now God goes, have a burger. You know, starting the world over, you're going to do it right. Probably with the atmospheric change, might have been more necessary to get some of the nutrients that you'd find in meat and some of the proteins and everything that you would need that maybe they didn't need beforehand. But again, all you animal lovers, this is what it says. I'm just telling you the story. He says, go ahead, get off the boat, make babies, and you're going to have to chase an animal before you eat it. So, you know, that's kind of, you know, what he lays out there. But he also says that you also need to have something different here. You're going to have the death penalty now. If a man sheds blood, by man will his blood be shed. Why would you institute this kind of criminal law at a time like this? Obviously, they didn't really have that strict of a police control before this. And so you could kill people without a penalty. Well, now he says even, hey, if an animal kills a person, kill the animal. But he's going, if a person kills a person, kill them. Now, that just seems so hostile to us. And for many of us, maybe in our mentalities, we may think, man, I love people so much, I'm totally against the death penalty. I'm totally against criminal sentences for people who do bad things. That's kind of the way our society is developing. And I'm not all gung-ho death penalty, because as I see the death penalty as it's executed today, it's all dumb people and poor people who get executed. If you're rich enough to hire a good lawyer, it doesn't happen to you. And that's certainly a problem. But what God is saying is, we'll be right back where we started from if somebody won't step up and say, sometimes somebody has to die or we will all die. This is theoretically what a just war is about. It's like the object of war is to kill people. But if the object of war is to kill people, if you are killing people who will kill you if you don't kill them, it actually saves society by allowing parts of society to have to be destroyed. That's what the flood did. And the more we get to the point where we're not comfortable with this, the more we believe that it's like live and let live and, you know, oh, let's give them another chance and everything, then the worse our society becomes. The greater the problems that we deal with, it's just going to be that way, because we aren't willing to say, look, to a criminal, to a habitual criminal, to go, you know what? I know you've got problems. I know you had a bad father. I know you've got all kinds of genetic stuff going on and you have ADD and everything. But sometimes you just got to lean in over the plate and take one for the home team. Because if you're allowed to continue to do what you're doing, you will destroy humanity. And so you're either put in a warehouse or you're put out of your misery, or what we have is a world that's totally out of control, like the world before the flood. See what I'm saying? It, some people have to die in order for everyone to end up living. And so he lays that out. And then the last thing that God did in this little orientation to the new earth was to say, by the way, look at that rainbow in the sky. Now, they had never seen a rainbow before. If my postulation is correct that there was this water canopy around the earth, the potential for a rainbow to develop wouldn't have happened there. See, a rainbow happens because rays of the sun shine into a drop of rain, which they wouldn't have had at that time, and then a drop of rain acts as a prism and disperses the light into the different colors, and that's how it works. So this is the first rainbow they've ever seen, but God says, whenever you see that rainbow, I want you to remember that I'm promising you this is the last time I'm going to destroy the earth with a flood. So it's God's faithfulness to say, I had to do this once. The next time I do it, it will be final. But right now, you don't get all freaked out about, oh no, the world is going to end, we're going to destroy ourselves. Growing up as a kid, in my generation, in my era, we believed that the Russians were going to be bombing us. We used to duck down. They would blow a horn in school, and we would duck down under these, you know, Masonite desks and cover our eyes, thinking that that would stop us from a nuclear holocaust. It just made you feel better to be afraid all the time of something, you know, that wasn't going to happen anyway. God didn't want people to live with that kind of fear. Like, oh, when's the next flood coming? When's the next catastrophe happening? No, what God wanted his people to wait for is for him to show up and change everything. For the promise of Genesis 3, the seed of woman who would destroy the enemy. That's what they should be looking forward to, not further destruction. He won't do this again. As much as it seems like it would be warranted, God promised. And the rainbow reminds us of that all the time.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolf is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. With takeaway lessons from the story of the flood, here again is Pastor Dave.
So, you know, what do we take away from this story? It's a cool story. It's a story that I believe. What do we take away from it? First of all, I love the fact that God keeps his promises. In fact, again, a promise to say a seed of woman will someday destroy the devil, the one who messed everything up, the one who's responsible for all of it. God goes, I will do anything I have to do, including after long warnings, destroying most of the people who I love. Because if they keep destroying each other, that promise will not be fulfilled. So we're going to go Earth 2.0. And we're going to just have to start all over. That's how, even though God was so sorry, even though this was difficult for him, God always keeps his promises. Now, God has promised certain things to us. God will not let anyone, hell or high water, stop him from doing what he says he's going to do. And so I know when he says that he's going to bring good out of everything that happens to me, just crazy enough to believe him because I've seen how he handles his other promises. When he says someday he's going to come back and he's going to destroy all evil and give us a fresh start, I believe him because God absolutely keeps his promises. Another thing that I think we just need to remember from this story, and it's introduced at the beginning and you don't have a lot said about it after that, God feels. I mean, that's presented as this is how it affected him. This is how he felt when he was doing what he felt. Now, for us, theologically, sometimes we're like, no. God can't feel because, I mean, that would make him like a human. He created us in his image. The only reason it's a problem for God to be torn or for God to feel is if we think feelings are bad. If you think feeling something is wrong, or you think being conflicted on something is bad, then yeah, we have to ignore what it says about God here because he is presented as being torn. But the truth is, we're all torn. We're all in situations all the time where it's like, I think I know what I'm supposed to do, but I'm not sure, and oh, this is going to be hard, and I kind of don't want to do. I mean, that dominates our lives. It is not a life of complete clarity. It's a life in which we are torn. And I think God here in the story lets us know sometimes you have to watch something that you love be destroyed. Sometimes you have to do something that it doesn't feel good to do it, but you just know this is what I have to do. And so I love that about this story. I personally love reading about a God who feels.
Next time on The Balanced Word, we'll consider the story of Abraham. Make plans to join us as we continue through the Bible and stories with Pastor Dave Raw. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play.